You have to turn this on? Oh. Okay, I'm going to call the meeting to order. Hello, hello.
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 Hello, hello.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
I was going to start reading these instructions without you being here, Commissioner, because I figured by the time I read them, you'd be here. So good afternoon, everybody, and to those listening to this meeting, welcome to the meeting, this special meeting of the Board of Neighborhood Commissioners. Today's date is Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019, and the meeting was called to order at 1:30. If you wish to become more involved in the Neighborhood Council system and are not on our mailing list, please sign up at the table in the sign-in kiosk, or you can also sign up on your phone by texting commission to 555-888. During the meeting today, we will discuss the items listed on the meeting agenda in numerical order unless I receive a request from a board member to take an item out of order. Copies of the agenda and related documents are available to those who are here in the meeting in the back table. If any board member has a conflict of interest at the time an agenda item is announced for discussion, the board member should identify this general nature of the conflict. Sorry, I put my glasses on. Indicate that he or she is recusing him or herself from participating in the matter and leave the room during the duration of the discussion of the item. Before we make a decision on any item, members of the public will have an opportunity to provide comments on the item under consideration. Members of the public who wish to speak on multiple agenda items shall be allowed to speak for a total of 5 minutes per meeting and may allocate time in 1 minute increments per item when the agenda item is called, or they may speak during the multiple agenda item comment period for 5 minutes on multiple agenda items. If you have a general comment on an item that is not listed on the agenda, you may provide your comment during the public comments portion of the meeting. Public comment should be directed to the board rather than to individuals. Please understand there are applicable laws that limit the actions we may take during today's meeting. Thus, we may be legally prohibited from acting on a concern that you have expressed. However, your concern may become the topic of discussion at a future board meeting after we have had the chance to list the item on the agenda. Should you wish to comment on this meeting, please fill out an electronic speaker request on the speaker card kiosk for each agenda item you wish to address so that you may be heard. You will be called by me when it is your turn to speak. Please be sure to place the number of the agenda item you wish to speak about on the speaker request form. A speaker request may be filled out using the speaker card kiosk located on the table in the back of the room or by texting the commission to 555-888 or via the website at empowerla.org, commission policies and meetings. If you intend to speak on any item, you must submit your electronic speaker request prior to the start of the meeting or prior to the call of that item. When a person is speaking, they are entitled to courtesy and respect. Please refrain from any other discussion in the room. If you wish to chat, please take that discussion outside while our meeting is in session. We treat one another with respect. That means we act with civility and decorum. Competing viewpoints may be articulated without the need for inappropriate or uncivil actions. Last but not least, please switch your cell phone ringers to vibrate or silent. We will now call the meeting to order and have a roll call.
Commissioner Atkinson?
Here.
Commissioner Lippman?
Here.
Commissioner Schaefer?
Here.
Commissioner Derek Kittles, absent. Commissioner Webby?
Here.
Commissioner Regalado?
Here.
We have quorum.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda, item number 3, is approval of the minutes of the regular meeting of November 19th, 2018. Where are those minutes? That's all right. We received them ahead of time, so is there any comment on the minutes from the meeting of November the 19th?
Yeah, I will have to recuse myself who was not present.
I move that we approve the minutes from...
Okay, is there a second?
The minutes from November 19th.
We might have to table that because you weren't here either. So there's only three of us here. We might have to table the minutes to the next meeting, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay, so the minutes for November 19th, 2018, we'll save to the next meeting for approval. The next meeting was approval of the minutes of the regular meeting of December 4th, 2018.
Yeah.
I will move those minutes.
All right. Is there a second to the approval of the minutes from December 14th, 2018?
Who was here?
I'm sorry, I have a question. Why are we having to table that? We're at the meeting or here?
No. Lynn had to recuse himself, and Commissioner Regalado wasn't here.
I have to abstain.
Well, maybe
so there's only three of us. He had to abstain.
Because I wasn't at that meeting.
Well, then,
but it's still,
Commissioner Regalado had to be there.
Okay.
So Mr. Regalado wasn't here, and Mr. Schaefer.
All right.
Clearly, the minister was. Because we needed four people to have quorum.
Where was the meeting? Mr. Schaefer was?
On November, this is November.
It's November 19th.
According to the minutes, Commissioner Regalado was in attendance and voted at that meeting.
Yes.
Oh, were you here?
Yes, he was.
Okay.
All right, we're good, man.
He won.
Let's do it.
Yep.
So, excuse me, Deputy City Attorney Carmen Hawkins. If the commissioner is abstaining from participating as opposed to recusing himself, then he would be, his vote would be counted as a yes, and so you would still have quorum for purposes.
No, but we have it anyway, so. Okay. All right, so then I will take a motion then to accept the minutes of the regular meeting of November 19th, 2018.
Okay.
Did we? Oh, we did that. Did somebody make that motion? Did you?
Yeah, I moved.
Oh,
I moved that
I
we.
I'm sorry, because I didn't get
the minutes of
we
November
got into a discussion
19,
and I didn't.
2018.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I think you second?
All right. So it's been moved by Commissioner Lipman and seconded by Commissioner Wiebe to accept the minutes of November 19th, 2018. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition?
No, but I was saying.
All right. item number four is the approval of the minutes of the regular meeting of December 4th, 2018. Now, we know Commissioner Regalado wasn't here for that.
Neither was Commissioner Wiebe.
Oh, and neither was Commissioner Wiebe. Okay.
If they abstain, we still have it.
So we still don't have, so we don't have a vote on that. We have to table those minutes.
Deputy City Attorney Carmen Hawkins, if the members are abstaining from participating under the rules, those abstentions are counted as yes votes. And,
but
they're,
who's
and they're present for and they're counted for purposes of quorum.
But is she abstaining or she wasn't here? She wasn't here. So there's only three of us.
She's abstaining from participating in the matter that gets counted as a yes vote.
Yeah, that's just fine.
It works.
It works.
It's fine.
It's all good.
Oh, even if she wasn't here, if she's abstaining.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, because I thought you couldn't take it up if someone was missing, so thank you.
So I will move those minutes.
All right. Is there a second to accept?
I second.
All right, it's been moved by Commissioner Schaefer and seconded by Commissioner Lipman to accept the meeting minutes from December 4th, 2018. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Thank you very much.
Ask for abstention.
Oh. Are you abstaining?
Is that the correct terminology?
Yes.
Yes, I abstain.
And so
thank
does
you.
Commissioner
Regalado abstains also.
Okay.
All right, so there was two abstentions to that motion, Commissioner Regalado and Commissioner Wiebe. All right. Item number five. Have there been any neighborhood council resolutions or community impact statements filed with us, with the city clerk, I'm sorry, which relates to any agenda item listed? Nope. Nothing filed with us, Little Lynn? No? Okay. Okay. Item number six is a multiple agenda items comment that I had talked about earlier. Is there anyone here that would like to comment on multiple agenda items that are on our agenda for today? Oh, okay. That's item number six. Item number seven are verbal updates from representatives of the mayor, the Los Angeles City Council, or any other city representative. Yep. That's number seven. Number eight are verbal updates from representatives of the Los Angeles Neighborhood Council budget advocates.
Okay. May I?
Yes. Commissioner Schaefer.
Commissioner Schaefer, I know they're not here. However, I'd just like to let the commissioners know that the, and I'm doing this based on the report we got yesterday at our meeting from the budget advocates, that the white paper is just about done, and anybody who would like to look at it can go to the website. It's NCBALA, Neighborhood Council Budget Advocates LA.com, and you can access the white paper there.
It's on there right now? I mean, they finished it? Or?
No, but there's a copy of it you can look at, yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Item number nine, general public comment, comments from the public on non-agenda items. Anything on that? No? Okay. Thank you. And there's no one here from the city clerk's office, is there?
Yes.
Oh, okay, great. That's item number 10, update and discussion on the neighborhood council funding by the office of the city clerk.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Melvin Cañas from the Office of City Clerk, NC Funding Program. So I'm here to give you an update on...
I'm not sure. I think you might have to talk into the microphone, I'm assuming.
Melvin Cañas from the Office of the City Clerk, NC Funding Program. We just pass out this handout for you to have while I make our presentation. So.
Can you, do you have an extra copy you can leave at the public table?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's a copy for the public. And I think there should be some left over after we go. Yeah. So it's what you're getting is a snapshot of where the funding program is citywide as of today in terms of expenditures by neighborhood councils across the city. And the second sheet is a outline of the updates to the funding program policies and guidelines that were just released last Friday. So that's a brief summary of where the changes were made and what sections of the policies. And the new the updated policy document is on our website. So to start off with looking at the dashboard image is basically telling you where you know, I think I presented this to you at the last time I was here back in November. And so in general, where we are right now in citywide, neighborhood councils have a net available of $2.7 million out of the $4.1 million that has been allocated to them. For the fiscal year, they spent about 35% of their allocated funds for the fiscal year. 40% of that of those funds spent have gone towards outreach. 38% towards operational expenses. 18% towards neighborhood purpose grants (NPGs), and 1% each towards community improvement projects and election expenditures. Although elections, we expect to go up soon, as given that NCs are getting into election season. Citywide as well, in terms of check payment requests, we have received a total of just a little bit over 1,500 check payment requests through the funding portal system. Of those, 78% have been approved, 16% have been denied, and others are under review. And the turnaround time for that is a little bit over 2 days to respond to those requests and reach a resolution. Credit card expenditures, we have over 3,100 credit card transactions that have been done by all neighborhood councils with a city credit card. We request NCs to upload the receipts for those transactions into the portal system within 10 days. On average, where we are right now is right below 8 days. And of those transactions, we're working with NCs to have a missing receipt submitted. We have about 102 receipts that have yet to be submitted into the portal that to account for those transactions, so we are working with them to get those. In the month of, this month of January, we've had a busy month doing trainings across the city. We had a general program and system training at the Dunn office just last week. We had about a dozen, board members from across the city come. We did that during the day. Earlier in the month, we had one training at Central San Pedro Neighborhood Council at the request of the board to do a training at their board. And then we also had a training at Van Nuys Neighborhood Council. We had placed the Neighborhood Council into frozen status due to some expenditure issues, and we requested that we be scheduled for a training, which they quickly did within a month. And so the training was scheduled in the middle of January to comply with our request. We've also conducted a roundtable. This one was the one scheduled for the valley, for the North and South Valleys. We had it on Saturday, January 12th, in the Reseda Neighborhood Council hosted us. It was a great venue. We had over a couple of dozen people in attendance, and we just covered primarily events. We had a brief presentation on events, but we also opened it up to the floor, for just questions from everyone in attendance about the funding program in general. And so those roundtables, our idea is to keep them going periodically throughout the fiscal year to go into each region and make brief presentation on a particular topic, and then answer questions, comments from the NC members in the area. Like I said, right now we did release updated policies just last Friday. And the second document that you have there lists where those updates were created. It was primarily having to do around issues of just to clarify language in the policies regarding what's considered gift of public funds, to make that more clear. And most of it was nothing really new, just to clarify. During the course of since the last update to the policies in July, we've had some discussions with some NCs that felt that the policies, the way were written, were not as clear or it was confusing. So we had discussions with some individual NCs. We did also have a meeting with the funding program work group, which is made up of treasurers or financial officers from different neighborhood councils across the city. So we had representatives from the North and South Valley, from the Central area, from the Harbor, South LA. We missed the West area and East area representatives there, but we had a pretty lengthy meeting from about 2 p.m. until almost 6:30 p.m. one day to go over the policies in general, and they provided us with plenty of input, and so those were incorporated, and so others were taken into advice. And so this is the current edition of the policies, you know, and I say current because, you know, we try to improve them as we go along, and we'll continue taking input. And so this document that you have there with you was sent out to the NCs also on Friday, asking them, you know, to review it and to give us their advice by sending us their comments to our general email box. And so that's where we are right now in general. So I don't know if you have any questions.
Commissioner Schaefer has a question.
Commissioner Schaefer, can you tell me the authority for the $10,000 rollover?
So that is something that we have been working with the understanding that it will be in effect. And so that is one of the discussions that we had with the work group, also with our management, that is coming along. And so we've entered discussions as to how that is going to work out, given what the committee is, we have from the committee at this point.
So you're assuming that the city council is going to vote it?
No. So it's not implemented yet. It's not implemented. There's nothing implemented until we hear an official action from city council.
And specifically, what have you done to clarify things such as neighborhood councils supplying food for events, say for a city council event?
Well, the issue having to do with neighborhood councils spend funds for items, services, products that are invoiced to the neighborhood council for services, goods rendered to the neighborhood council. What we have found in some instances are invoices being sent to the neighborhood councils and then the NC sending them over to us for payment processing, and those invoices are not being issued to the neighborhood council but to another entity. And even if it may be another city agency, it is still not being invoiced correctly. So we wanted to clarify that if an NC is going to pay a bill, that bill needs to be made out to them for services rendered to the NC. So whether it be for an event that they are sponsoring, has the NC co-sponsored that event? You know, has the NC, is the NC owning that event, or are you, you know, paying someone else's bill, so to speak? And so, which in accounting purposes, we need to be sure that the NC is paying its own bills.
Okay, so what I want to clarify, a neighborhood council is invited to a city council event, such as a homeless day or something like that, asked to be there and asked to bring refreshments.
Right.
And the neighborhood council goes there and brings refreshments. They aren't sponsoring the event or anything else. Is that still allowed under your guidelines?
And that was another distinction made, that, you know, so is the NC hosting, co-hosting, co-sponsoring or sponsoring that event, or is the NC conducting outreach? So in some instances, the NC will be conducting outreach at that event. And they will be at that event. They will be given a booth, a table, an opportunity to speak and address the attendees. So they have nothing to do with the event but to be there and do outreach for the neighborhood council to inform the attendees about the event, about the NC itself. And they can have refreshments there at their table, to offer a bottle of water or snacks to people. So that's definitely possible for an NC to do. Now, if the NC is actively involved in the event, you know, organizing, implementing it, then it sounds like the NC is sponsoring or co-sponsoring that event. And for that, there is a process to follow, which is the event approval process. You know, the board approves as an event and is submitted to our office for review.
Okay, and just for clarification on that, a neighborhood council that joins with other, say, NGOs or other parts of the city mm-hmm. as part of an event, and those other, the NGOs or the other city agencies obtain all of the permits and such. Mm-hmm. Is there still an event form that you deem necessary at that point?
If the NC is a sponsor or co-sponsor of that event, those may be some of the documents that we request depending on the scope of what the event entails. So, and who's involved, what is the NC doing, what may be the liability for the city, depending on all that review, which we conduct with the Office of Risk Management and some, you know, city attorney's office as well, we may ask those involved to provide us with those documents that you mentioned, either a certificate of insurance,
a permit from the venue, for example, you know, to ensure that the venue has authorized that event. So it all depends on what the event entails.
Okay, that leads me to the next area, if I may. You want an event form 30 days prior to the event. Jeff Brill approves all contracts and such. I have been involved in this specifically because of an event that occurred. Do you think that's sufficient time to be able to, one, get risk management to go through it, two, to contact the bouncy operator and say, good, get the city named as a co-insured on your certificate of insurance and present it to us so that we can send it to you for review and things of that nature? Is the 30 days, you think, really enough time?
That's what our policy currently states, that at least 30 days in advance. Like I said, in some cases, depending on the activity and the scope of the activities proposed for the event, definitely more time is needed. And so because it does run through risk management, city attorney's office, our management for review. And so in there are cases where we definitely do need more than 30 days. So.
What I'm concerned about is, you and I both know, if your document says 30 days, mm-hmm. even if it says at least 30 days, mm-hmm. most people are going to take that to mean 30 days, and you're going to end up with some terrific problems if you have three or four neighborhood councils all having events at the same time, and you have a person, that's Jeff Brill, who's doing this. Would you look at perhaps extending that, depending on the type of event?
Definitely, yeah.
And last but not least, clarifications with regard to gift of public funds. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was some comment, putting your name, et cetera, on an object does not relieve you with regards to gifts of public funds. Could you clarify that a bit, please?
So, yeah, so neighborhood councils are able to provide promotional items as outreach at activities that they host as for outreach purposes, at their events that they sponsor or co-sponsor. And so through what our policy states is that neighborhood councils can provide promotional items as outreach that are of nominal value and cost. And so, you know, we're talking about pens, you know, refrigerator magnets that have the NC's name and contact information branded on those items, so that, you know, someone walking away with it, they can remember where they got it and find out more about the NC if they wish. We have run into some situations where neighborhood councils are proposing to provide items that are more than nominal cost or value. For example, umbrellas, onesies for babies, jackets, sweaters that go beyond what, you know, what may be deemed, you know, as a reasonable, if I may use the term, promotional items. And some, I know the issue of providing turkeys, you know, during the holidays.
Oh, no, I know that was a problem.
Right. You know, let's slap a sticker on the side of the turkey and we'll call it an outreach. Well, you know, that's running into the issue of something beyond a promotional item and running into the realm of a possible gift of public fund. And so that's one of the things that we try to clarify in the current updated policies as to, you know, we can't outline every single item that you can give or cannot give. We can't get into that, but the idea is to advise NCs as to, you know, what's considered a promotional item.
I have a question, or actually a comment, because I agree, you have guidelines and you can't put an example of every single event that you would have to have a guideline for. But it seems to me in your training or somewhere, and I don't know if there is a statement that says, here are the guidelines, but before every event, maybe you better check. In other words, if I were in a neighborhood council and I saw the guidelines, but I'm getting ready to co-sponsor something, and what's a promotional item and what's not a promotional item, what's too expensive, what cost, it seems to me like there would still be questions up in the air, and there should be, it seems to me on all of these instructions that there should be, if you have questions, if you have doubts, if you really need further clarification, please call. And I don't know if you have that on your website or not, because I listened just now, but of course I don't write everything down either, but I listened just now, and it can be very confusing. And it seems to me, but then in my mind, if I'm confused, I would just call you. I don't know if people would automatically do that or try to figure it out and then make a mistake, and then all of a sudden you're not okaying their expenditure. And so it just seems to me, and I don't know where you have that statement or if you have that statement that says, you know, when in doubt, you know, please call for clarification.
So, no, so definitely, I mean, that's something that we do state, make clear at our trainings, you know, that, yeah, that's our purpose for being there as a staff, as funding reps in the funding program, to clarify and be of assistance. And in the document, we do provide some brief examples, such as, you know, including that limited to. So we do try to provide some examples, and we do state in our policies, and also in this handout that you have that's made available to them to contact us, there is an event checklist that we made available that I brought a copy of last time that I was here. That is also, we believe, you know, clearly stated there, you know, that's what, you know, to please call us in for a clarification. Unfortunately, we cannot.
So what are you finding when you talk about that there are, you know, certain expenditures that you did not okay that were declined? What are you finding? Are they not filling out their forms correctly? Have you found out, is there a general problem with some of these expenditures, or is it how they fill out the forms, or is it what they're spending their money on?
Well, so in reference to the events request form, right, so the event request form consists of three pieces of document. One, the actual event request form, which is a one sheet of paper, double-sided, and in the back it requires a signature. Often that signature is missing. Number two is the board approval, that the board approved this proposed event. Often we don't get a BAC. Number three is a itemized budget. Give us a budget for the expenses proposed for this event as approved by the board. Often we won't get an itemized budget. And we ask for an itemized budget because in the itemized budget, we will be able to tell, you know, who are the vendors involved, what are maybe some of the liabilities, and if it's something that requires a possible agreement, you know, is the vendor requiring an agreement, or, you know, this will require this information. So we are improving in that sense, in that some NCs are taking it up front and providing us some of the documents already because they've gone through the process. Others are still, you know, we have to wait for them to give us the itemized budget for us to consider the packet complete, and then we can engage in a discussion as
to, see, that's, because that makes sense to me. That's why I don't get it. If you're having an event, if you're a neighborhood council, it seems to me you ought to be able to sign the form, present a budget, and tell you guys what the vote is on at the board. And those are items. Somehow, why are these people missing the most obvious things that they need to be answered, that need to be answered, like signing the doggone form and giving you a budget so you know what you're okaying? And everybody knows that when you do an event, the board has to pass it, so give the board vote. Right. Those are simple items, and why are they missing those items? Why aren't they doing it? And we probably need to try to find out so that can be corrected, because I thought maybe it would be a bigger problem. I don't know that they were doing something else wrong, but that's just not filling out the forms correct.
You know, no, so that's the, you know, what begins, right? I mean, what starts the discussion, starts the process.
Maybe they're doing it too
fast or something. Once we review it, then we start getting into other issues about, well, you know, because of conversations with Office of Risk Management, this is, okay, there is a level of liability or risk that is caused for the city in this event. We need to please have the vendor provide their certificate of insurance to ensure that they are insured.
Yeah, I agree.
And so NCs will then have to contact the vendor to provide it, and then we engage in a back and forth. Well, you know, they don't have it. What else can we do? And there are some options that can be pursued in those cases. But so once we have all those that package initially, those three pieces of document that I mentioned, then we can better
advise. So do you have, between the time that they present the event, is there time to make those corrections, or are they waiting to the last minute and then it messes up everything?
We get a little bit of everything. And so the sooner we get it, that's why I said, you know, if we can get it 30 days in advance or even more, even better. And, you know, some NCs do a great job of submitting it way in advance. because of the scope of the what's proposed. Other NCs, you know, I will say some NCs do come in within under 30 days, but when we take a look at the event, it's something rather simple, straightforward, and we can process it right away, sometimes even the same day when they've given us all information up front. Yeah, so it's a mixed bag.
Yeah. Question. Commissioner Regalado, thanks for being here, Melon.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I have a couple questions and some clarifications. I'm going to start off with your new guidelines. When you come up with new guidelines, is there a time frame in which you have an expectation that these guidelines will be implemented at the neighborhood council level? You know, is there a schedule that once a new guideline is developed and, say, published and mm-hmm. distributed, that there's a X amount of days that neighborhood council should be aware and start implementing these new guidelines and things like that? Can you tell me a little bit about the process when these new guidelines come out and, you know, what the expectation is?
So the first set of policies that were released from funding program under the city clerk were back in officially February, early February. The goal was to send that out in January, in the middle of the fiscal year. The discussion was that if, when necessary, we would release updated policies, in the midpoint of the fiscal year or at the beginning of the fiscal year. So that's where we've kept our schedule to right now. So we released it at the midpoint last fiscal year. Then the second version was released in July of this new fiscal year. And now this update right now in the middle of this fiscal year. So that's about it. We started the review process. Well, when we release the policies, we invite NCs to give us feedback. We've had on our website, there is a section where individuals interested can provide feedback. That has been, as of yesterday, we had about 8 entries in the portal. But there were more general questions about the funding program, about forms. In this release, we asked people just to send us, if it's easier, so you don't have to visit a website, email us, or give us a call. And so we'll take that in consideration throughout the course of the fiscal year. And so for this current review process, we started the actual discussion internally about in November. We had the meeting with the funding program work group, the NC representatives, in December. And the goal was to release it in, you know, this month of January. So that is in general terms so what our schedule is.
So what is the expectation that these new policies and guidelines will be utilized by NCs as of February, that there's an expectation that the NCs will start using them? Or because I was listening to your mm-hmm. to your explanation, and quite honestly, it was a little confusing.
Okay.
So I would imagine that there might be others out there who may get these guidelines and policies and not understand when their obligation commences to implement these mm-hmm. new policies and guidelines, as opposed to, as I was listening to your presentation, that perhaps maybe there is a consistent part of the, you know, a consistent date that's used yearly or whatever, you know, and with implementation ramp up and then actually a drop dead ramp up date that seems to be something that the NCs can be held responsible to adhere to, as opposed to something comes out in December, public NC input, and then in January it's ready to go.
Right.
It just seems like the time frame could be a little bit difficult for those NCs who might be struggling. A lot of new people, you know, as we get constantly, the fact that we meet monthly, and, you know, sometimes it takes a little bit of time for us to look and understand and ask the questions and things like that. Mm-hmm. It just seems that the process might be in place to hamstring, you know, a particular NC or others, you know, from be able to effectively utilize this, unless there is a consistent process that can be looked upon, knowing that, okay, here's the ramp-up period, we'll advise, ask your questions over the time, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm throwing it out as possibly, you know, kind of a more user-friendly thing for those NCs that are find themselves, as I had said earlier, with newer people.
Right.
People may not be experienced in the bureaucratic process, as many of our people are not, you know, so it might be a little bit user-friendly, and it'll give people an ample time to ramp up and understand and so on. So I like to throw that as a suggestion so that, you know, we might be able to help our NCs do a better job with new policies and so on. I have one other question that I'd like to talk about, and it was something that came out as a question that I believe Commissioner Schaefer indicated or identified as asking for refreshments and things like that. And those and I for perhaps outreach purposes and things like that when we're asked to participate. Is there a difference between refreshments that are provided for an outreach purpose versus refreshments or slash food that many neighborhood councils utilizes to bring people to their meetings? Because I technically I wouldn't say that that's something that would I would consider as a outreach opportunity. I see it more as a necessity because many of our neighborhood councils occurs at dinner time, and sometimes we serve something that people can come out and participate because you know we provide them with something that's a bit more than a bag of chips or you know prepackaged cookies and things like that, which A is really not very nutritious, but the fact is that, you know, I'd hate to see a family come out to my neighborhood council with their kids in tow and we're feeding them chocolate chip cookies and we got kids bouncing off the walls and things like that, which makes our neighborhood councils a little bit more difficult to run than normal. So I'm wondering, is there a distinction? I mean, are we able to be able to get away with something a little bit more substantive at our neighborhood councils versus these, you know, maybe for a quick meeting that we're asked to participate, you know, and give away a Danish or coffee or water and things like that, we're actually looking for people to come out, participate in our neighborhood council meetings because, you know, we're starting our meetings at dinner time for the most part.
No, so definitely the policies do address that, you know, the ability of the NCs to provide refreshments, snacks at meetings in line with what the controller's manual allows in terms of you know use of the funds at official business meetings of a city agency. So we're following those guidelines. So NCs can definitely provide, like I said, those snacks. You know, like I said, coffee, pastries, water, juice. You know, at meetings. Now, then when we turn to events, or even outreach activities, and like I said that. You know, we do make a distinction between a simple outreach activity that NC wants to do versus a full-on event. Depending on what it is that we've had a case where an NC says, you know, we want to do have a table to conduct outreach at someone else's event. Okay, you know, and we're gonna pass out, chocolate bars or you know chips, water. People can come and they be attracted to our booth and we can engage them, so that's part of that's allowed. You know, that's no problem. Snacks, refreshments. We've had some instances where they tell us the same thing. Okay, we're gonna have a booth, we want to attract people, and we want to have a food truck next to us, giving out, you know, tacos or hamburgers to people, or have a vendor. You know, making tacos or have a cart. That, you can imagine, creates a higher sense of liability and risk. It's doable. It can be done. The issue is that then let's make sure that we secure the certificate of insurance or health permit from the vendor, and is the vendor asking for an agreement? You know, which often these vendors will ask for an agreement. Which asks for advance payment, which the city does not do advance payment, but our policies do have created a way for NCs to do provide some deposit. So we do work with DNCs, and you know, depending on, so it all depends on the scope of what DNC wants to do. Then we advise them as to what can be done. But like I said, food and meetings, as allowed by the controllers' guidelines, you know, that's what impacts our meetings as well.
So maybe I haven't seen that particular food allowed by the controller's office, but I will tell you that I'm hearing, again, the explanation, and I'm still hearing the same type of food distributed at an outreach event that would create more high sugar and stuff, you know, for individuals, not necessarily something that's going to bring people out to your meeting. And I'm just making a distinction between an outreach event and a meeting where we're asking our communities to come out and participate, you know, to give us the input that's that other city departments would like us to hear, you know, the city council, all these other, you know, issues, council files that we're expected to file. You know, we don't do it just out of the back of our head. You know, we're looking at opportunities to hear what the community has to say so that we can provide a good community-based council file statement and so on. So anyway, with that, if there can be something that I could see, because I got an earful from our a couple of our budget and financial people, a bit confused as to what they can do at the neighborhood council level versus, you know, these other events. So I'd appreciate something that we can have and perhaps even start the conversation, because I do see a distinction between a neighborhood council meeting and an outreach event. And I think, you know, there should be a bit more liberty at that particular time when we're trying to bring people out to participate.
Yeah, no, so we can have a discussion, you know, okay. and go over what we currently have that I think addresses that, and if, you know, we need to address that further, we can definitely do.
Okay,
so,
great.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Deputy City Attorney Carmen Hawkins, can I add something for the conversation? Institutionally, and this predate, and this basically goes back before funding went over to the city clerk, the basis, the policy basis, or the legal basis for providing refreshments at a neighborhood council meeting was really based on an outreach analysis, because it becomes a matter of weighing the use of public funds and gift of public funds, mm-hmm. of just feeding people. And so I believe that In looking at historically the justification of allowing food to be provided, whether it was just snacks or Subway sandwiches, I think mm-hmm. it's kind of Subway, maybe some pizza.
Yeah.
Was again maintaining a relationship. It had a relationship to the whole purpose of it was outreach to encourage individuals to come to meetings, and that meals could not be so, as they would say, over the top, as that someone would claim that this was a gift of public funds in what was being provided. And I believe that over time, in looking at the controller's guidelines, that's kind of where that direction, you know, where that direction has come from.
Yeah.
So with respect to maybe the quality, you know, the quality of the snacks that are being provided would be something that the neighborhood council would determine whether they're going to provide, you know, carrots and celery sticks and peanut butter versus cookies and chips. I think that really that's within the discretion of the individual neighborhood councils, but it still has to be, whatever they choose to do has to be justified within both the policy guidelines within funding as well as the law with respect to use of public funds.
I can certainly understand that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use the the excuse, if you will, of that, yeah. That we, times change, communities change, outreach techniques are constantly changing with our communities. So sometimes we have to stay along with our, you know, what our neighborhood's expectations are. And even in communities that are financially impacted versus those communities that have lots of resources, there are differences in there that I think we have to take into consideration. And those are the things that I'd like to be able to have, take a look at that list, yep. And be more realistic as to what is realistic in the distribution of city resources. And I completely agree. These are resources, and even from my perspective on the county side, you know, there are restrictions as to what we can and can't do when it comes to feeding community. But I also know when it's justified, even in our county environment, you know, we can justify putting something out for our community so that they could use, especially if we're in particular communities that could use some of this stuff. So anyway, Melvin, I would love to have that conversation a little definitely. Bit more and take a look and look at justification, because I'm getting questions now, okay. Especially with the more latest guidelines that were put out or clarifications that were
put out. Okay, yeah, I'd love to follow up and can, review that.
Great, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Commissioner Schaefer.
Okay, very briefly. I know it's difficult for you to come up with an answer to this, but the word nominal has different meanings to different people. Is there some guideline from the clerk's office with regards to nominal? Does nominal mean a buck item? Does it mean an item worth $5? Could it be an item worth $7? Or is it only items worth 50 cents or less? What are the guidelines with regards to that?
So, yeah, like you said, I think if you found it in the policy document there, yeah, it does have nominal cost and value. We did entertain the idea of putting in a particular dollar amount, but we understand that depending on what the item is and also the amount, the number of the items requested, that could change as well. And so it has been difficult to ascertain a particular amount. So we have seen, since we've started having this discussion in this regard with NCs, we've seen NCs requesting T-shirts with the NC's name on it that are under $3, under $5, because they order so many, or maybe the quality, but it's something that they're giving out at a community cleanup, and they want their volunteers to wear it. So it is difficult to specify an amount. I don't know if we're gonna get there. I don't know. Like I said, it's difficult to, when you start pigeonholing certain issues in documents, and then what if you go beyond that by one penny or two pennies? Are you gonna make an exception to that? And you know, and where do the exceptions stop? So at this point, we are, we do say in the document, if you know, please, if you have any questions, let us know. Give us a call. And we've advised some NCs just last week, you know, that they were planning on purchasing a number of some items that were, you know, considerably, I think, for outreach purposes may have been out there. So we advise, hey, would you consider perhaps, have the board consider ordering more of this? You know, we have an example of this NC that order, I think, the same item, and this is what their cost was.
Okay, and last but not least, with regards to events, it appears that there's a request for things like permits, et cetera, and expenses. If the permits are acquired by other sponsors, they have them. If the fire clearances for somebody who's fixing food is sponsored by somebody other than the neighborhood council, if there are expenses by, your local chamber buys all the booths for the vendors and such. What about those? What are the reporting criteria for that or responsibility for that? I'm a little confused reading some of this because it almost looks like you're saying that you want to know how much money is being spent by everybody on this event.
Well, and so that, you know, that is where the itemized budget and the description explanation of the event comes into play. We understand that if the NC is sponsoring the entire event, then that entire event costs and expenditures.
That's simple.
Yeah, right. But in a co-sponsorship, the itemized budget will tell us what the NC is responsible for and what they are and what they are not. But in terms of the venue, you know, depending on where it is, if it's at LAUSD, if it's at Rec and Parks, maybe the Rec and Parks director has authorized it, and the NC or the other co-sponsor did not have to go through the right of entry permit process. That would suffice to have an email, whether it be sent by the co-sponsor, by the park director, or by the NC. Maybe the NC has it themselves. They can provide to us, you know, yeah, this has been authorized to have it there. Or if it comes into play more when it's a private venue, because we understand we're dealing with private parties. But when it's a public entity like a park, LAUSD, you know, some are more strict than some, for example, principals may be more strict than others. And we just need, it doesn't matter who gets it, please provide us with a proof.
Maybe I misstated myself. Can I just clarify?
All right.
A neighborhood council pairs with three other NGOs, okay? And the neighborhood council has a certain amount of budgeting that they're doing, and we have our budget for purchasing this and doing that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. What I'm seeing here is we have to go to those other three NGOs and say, we need an itemized budget of what you're expending on this event so that the funding people know that we're not responsible for any of this, that you're paying for. Is that what this actually says?
No. What we're interested in knowing is what the NC is responsible for.
So if the NC puts out a budget and says, hi, this is the money we're spending, you don't care what anybody else is spending.
Well, obviously, you know, in the case of a venue, one of the NGOs is responsible for getting that venue, the event is a city event because the NC is involved in it and co-sponsoring. So at that point, it becomes a city event. So the city wants to be sure that that venue is safe and ADA compliant to host a public event. So whether the NC is paying that venue or an NGO that is co-sponsoring it, we would like to know that that venue has a certificate of insurance. And if an NGO is the one paying for it, then, you know, we would ask the NC, can you please contact your co-sponsoring NGO to get a copy of that certificate of insurance?
May I suggest that you make that more clear? Because right now it looks like what you want is just, you know, everything everybody's spending. I understand your problem with regards to certificate of insurance. I also understand that if we're teaming with Rec and Parks, that they are the ones responsible, and all you want is us to say, hi, go talk to Rec and Parks because they said we can use it and they're going to work with us. Would you make that a little more clear? Because right now it doesn't look, okay. It looks the other way. Okay, thank you.
I guess that was my question also, because it seems what's important, if Neighborhood Council is co-sponsoring with a bunch of other organizations, you just need to know, is the insurance straight? Are the permits straight, especially if it's on city property or it's a city event, you know? Mm-hmm. So you have to know that. I'm not quite clear on why you have to know the budget if the Neighborhood Council is co-sponsoring and has nothing to do with that portion of the budget. It seems to me they have to present a budget on what they're responsible for and what they have to pay. But yes, they should also say, well, here are the permit numbers and here are the permits, and such an organization was in charge of that, and such an organization was in charge of food, mm-hmm. And such an organization was in charge of entertainment, and we're just in charge of tents or chairs or something like that. Right. So that's what I think needs to be clarified, because it does sound like they have to go get the budget for the whole thing besides their own. And this doesn't seem like that. But I can understand the permits. Mm-hmm. You do need to know. Yeah.
We can definitely make that clearer. Yeah, we can review that, revisit that language. Yeah.
All right. Any other questions? Sorry. Nothing. Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your time. Yeah, thank you for your questions.
Even though we had a lot of questions, thank you. Your report's very good.
Thank you. And, you know, please work with your NCs.
The city always gives us good info.
The only thing is, I'm going to ask, when you start giving some of your trainings, your in-person trainings, would you remember there's a West San Fernando Valley, which means that it's west of the San Diego Freeway when you start holding those events?
We were at Reseda a couple of weekends ago, yeah.
You were.
And that was a great venue, so we asked them if they can, you know, invite us again. We like that venue, centrally located there, so, you know, closer to the west and not that far away from the 405.
We were very happy to see that. That's one of the first times. Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda, item number 11, General Manager's Report. Fine.
Good afternoon, Gracie Liu, General Manager for the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment. Just a few updates. We are still accepting nominations from the Power Lay Awards as well as the Civic Engagement Vanguard Awards. So the deadline for that would be February 1st. So if the commissioners could do friendly reminders to the neighbor councils in their areas, we'll also be reminding as well. There have been some updates, as you may have heard, to City Council. One of the updates is the change in our committee. Council Member Rue is still the chair of this committee. However, the committee name has changed. They've basically combined two committees. So now it's the Health, Education, Neighborhoods, Parks, Arts, and Rivers Community. And Council Member Rue is the chair. The vice chair is Council Member Mitchell Farrell. And the other member is Council Member Kern Price. We haven't gotten a final meeting time for this new committee. But once we do, we will make sure to send that out to everyone. The City Council did pass the Neighbor Council reforms last week, and I'm going to have actually Mike Fong give an update on what exactly was passed.
Thank you, Gracie. Mike Fong with the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment. Good afternoon, commissioners and members of the public. Last Wednesday, on January 16th, the City Council passed unanimously the system reforms, and thank you so much to the Board of Neighborhood Commissioners for hosting this item and many meetings in the community, and thank you to all the members of the community who came out and testified from the Neighborhood Council system as well. First thing is the instructing the department to begin phasing out the term Empower LA in any and all print and online messaging and branding, and to report back to the committee as referenced in 120 days. With a status update. Secondly, it's developing formal rules and guidelines and process for neighbor council selections, including minimum outreach requirements and allowable seat criteria, and that's a 120-day report back as well. So thirdly, implementing a system-wide minimum voting age and board member age of 16 years of age, with the exception of up to one youth seat per neighbor council, in which that person could be as young as 14 years of age. I'm sorry?
Updating voting age? You had an and in there. Would you repeat that?
I'm sorry. Implementing a system-wide minimum voting age and board member age of 16 years. I could send this electronically to everybody as well after the meeting. Fourthly, developing an ongoing book of best practices for community engagement and policymaking. That's something actually the department's been working on. And we have to report back in 120 days as well. Also coming out of the system reforms is developing a department's a main point of contacts list for all city departments, bureaus, or agencies, and it lists a whole number of city departments, so we'll work on that. Also instructing the department with the assistance of city clerk to report back to the committee on how to deliver demographic and neighborhood data to neighborhood councils, so this will help out with seat allocations and make sure that they're equitable. And also making sure that the seat and board structure is very much equitable. Also, working closely with the city attorney to report back on establishing rules and guidelines, stipulating that after each census, we'll look at any seats that are tied to residency and make sure that those seats are allocated proportionally based on population. Also working with the Department of City Planning on mandatory planning and land use management training. Some of the stuff is already in the works. We've been in our department's been in conversations with the planning department on trying to work on this jointly, and to also encourage all chairs and vice chairs of neighborhood council planning and land use committees to attend this training as well. And we have to report back in 120 days on that. Also, this is something that came out of the commission through your leadership, but also in collaboration with the Department of General Services, and reporting back to the committee on how we can access shared space and city facilities. This one was touched upon by Melvin earlier, but it's working with the city clerk and our department to implement a process by May 1st, 2019, to roll over a maximum of $10,000 in any given fiscal year. Also looking at the possibility of holding elections on the same day to provide a citywide outreach and advertising to increase voter turnout. And then also, this is in collaboration with the city attorney, amending and preparing and presenting an ordinance to amend the administrative code to define a community stakeholder. And this is the work of Commissioner Schaefer, Commissioner Libman, and members of the commission. So thank you for your work and efforts on that and defines that. So there's a number of reforms that were passed last Wednesday at the council meeting, and our department will be working with a number of city departments and collaborating with the city attorney on some of the issues, and we'll be reporting back to the Arts, Parks, Health, Education, River, that committee when that's so called for. So it's a lot of this is going to happen in the next 120 days. So just a brief update on what was passed in city council last week.
Mr. Schaefer, the stakeholder definition, is that a report back, or is that something they passed?
That one was passed.
Thank you.
Good question.
Commissioner Wavy, if I heard your report correctly, there isn't going to be a requirement for those in the position of chair of planning committee to take a specific training, which is what we heard over and over again, support for. It is a suggestion.
I'm sorry. It's thank you so much, Commissioner Ruby, for that question. Mike Fong with the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment. It's to design and implement a mandatory planning and land use management training. So this will be required for all chairs and vice chairs of neighborhood council planning and land use committees. But this will be open to every member of the neighborhood council, anybody wants to but it's mandatory
you.
For chairs and vice chairs of neighborhood council planning and land use committees.
Oh, so. Thank you. I'm so happy to hear that.
Thank you so much. That's just five additional clarification on it.
Wonderful.
Gracie Lee, General Manager of the Department of Empowerment. I just wanted to add, too, with that, we will, with the planning training, we'll be working with PlanCheck NC, which is our alliance for planning and land use issues in the neighborhood council system to create that mandated training. They've been instrumental in making sure that those neighborhood council members who are in planning and land use have gotten or received training so that they know what they're doing. So we're looking forward to that collaboration. And lastly, you know, just wanted to give a shout out to our election outreach team led by Tom Soon. We're really getting out there to the communities that we haven't really in the past and trying to recruit for candidates or just educate on the neighborhood council system. About, you know, several weeks ago, we did do a workshop that was to conduct outreach to immigrant communities and those who are formerly incarcerated to let them know about the neighborhood council system and that they can be a part of it. And we had a lot of positive feedback from that. And we are continuing to do our neighborhood council 101s and just getting out there and trying to recruit more people into the system. So really want to give shout out to Tom and our staff, his team, Semi Park and Jasmine Albarbery for doing Ignite LA, which is, you know, inviting more women to participate within the neighborhood council system. So we are seeing some increases in our candidate registration for the regions that are recently closed, region 5, 6, and 7. With that, I'm happy to answer any other questions you may have.
Can I say something first? I wanted to thank Commissioner Lippman and Commissioner Schaefer for working so hard on the recommendations and written testimony that they provided and going down to City Council and testifying. And I just wanted to give them credit because when I didn't read the final vote, but when I read what was coming out of the committee, I said, this sounds just like what Eli wrote. And then the stakeholder definition, you know, and I knew that that Lynn had contributed to that. And I know there was, you know, an issue between community stakeholder and definition. Anyway, but I really appreciate the fact that I feel like the board really made a contribution in that because I just recognized the recommendations and I was really and I just really wanted to give thanks to Commissioner Lippman and Commissioner Schaefer for the work that they did on that.
Thank you.
Bravo.
Quick comment.
Now, Commissioner Schaefer.
Just two comments. One, I wasn't able to attend the meeting at Browdy last Saturday. Unfortunately, I do have to work every once in a while. Our board members that did were very complimentary, said they learned a lot, and were very pleased with it. And I want to compliment your staff because when they said they were going to send out the materials by email, by gosh, they absolutely did. Those who attended and those who requested got the forms, got the slideshow and everything else. So it really worked well. But once again, as I commented to Tom Soon at the bank meeting, all they've done and the wonderful things you've done has just given us more tools to get people to run against ourselves on the boards and such. But otherwise, it's the efforts and the outreach and the cooperation of staff has really been great.
Thank you very much. I'll make sure to pass that on.
Anything else on
Eli?
Yeah, you guys got a lot of work to do in 120 days. How are you going to do it all?
We will make it happen like we always do. We will definitely sort it out. I think, you know, it's an update at 120 days. I think the committee understands that, you know, we're in the middle of elections. And so not only that, but we're in the middle of budget season as well. So they want updates in 120 days. I don't think they anticipate everything being finished, particularly like, you know, doing a rebranding of Empower LA. I mean, that's going to be like a two-year process. I think they just want to see what steps are going to be taken.
I mean, in terms of ones that I'd say would be priorities, I think obviously selections, particularly as these come up, having something in place and guidelines so that those who choose a selection or do a selection, they follow those guidelines. The original motion said that the city attorney would present an ordinance by January 14th to amend the administrative code. That didn't happen, though.
They found
Motion
it.
Didn't pass till the 15th.
Right, so y'all don't work retroactively? It's not like the government shutdown? Okay. I'm just wondering, where is this? Is it in limbo? Like, what happens now? Like, we're having elections. This was requested. Is there a timeline? Is the city clerk going to use this as sort of a reference point for the upcoming elections, or we miss these elections and we have to wait till 2021?
Yeah, so it's our understanding that city clerk will try to use some of the new recommendations, or the new actions as guidelines, but obviously the admin code is not going to be changed before the elections.
Okay. And, I mean, in terms of May 1, are you guys going to hit that date in terms of rollover? Because that's huge. That's, like, ground-shifting big change that is, like, I don't know if all neighborhood councils understand that. Like, this is a big news. This is on the level of, like, increasing the budgets when the city council increased it from $37,000 to $42,000. Being able to roll over funds has been an issue for
Yeah, so that's definitely under city clerk's purview, and so...
Oh, I should have asked them. Huh?
Yes, so hopefully they will get that completed in time.
On that note, I would just say to us as the board that an unresolved issue is the issue of funding equity. You know, we appointed and created this working group, and you know they did their work and never really finalized it. Mm-hmm. But it's great that we now have roller funds, but I still think that we as a commission in 2019 need to address funding equity, especially since we have such huge disparities in neighborhood council size and geographic and makeup and all kinds of issues. So, it's great that we have these rollover funds, but we shouldn't allow that to just be like, we're done with this, we can't address equity. So I just wanted to put that out there. And last question to Gracie. Mm-hmm. Okay. At the last or two commission meetings prior, the issue of child care services came up. Is there any forward progress on that issue?
No, we haven't set. I think this is something that we need to work with the city attorney's office on, and we do know that in the past child care services have been offered, and it was more through an RFP process, but I think that realistically it makes more sense to not do an RFP in this case and do more localized hiring of services. So it would just require like a risk assessment and standard contract. So I think that's something that's on our huge list of to-dos with the city attorney's office.
Okay. And then final question, and this. Maybe we can talk about this maybe in new business, but I think it's appropriate to come up here. I've received a lot of negative feedback about alliances, from very prominent people in civic life in Los Angeles. Decisions that are made, representations that they've made, representations of these bodies. Who is an alliance and who isn't an alliance. And I'm just wondering if the department has had any discussions or conversations related to that, because it's becoming a pretty serious issue and impacting communities like the bike and pedestrian community. There was a motion that came before one of the alliances that was extremely controversial, and then the next month was completely reversed because it was so poorly written, frankly.
So the only thing that is in the plan, a plan for citywide system of neighborhood councils about alliances, is that just basically states that neighborhood councils can form alliances, and that's pretty much it. There's no oversight that is conducted by the departments. Or even the city attorney's office, unless there's some type of like funding irregularity or conflict of interest, possibly. There are ones that receive city funds, like the Congress, although they're not necessarily so much of an alliance, but and budget advocates. And so because of them receiving public funds, there is possibly additional oversight. I know in the past, budget advocates were subject to Public Records Act requests because of those public funds. There hasn't been further analysis by the city attorney's office regarding whether or not they're subject to Brown Act or anything like that. It's not necessarily come up yet. I do understand the concerns because there are no necessarily standardized rules for what constitutes an alliance across the board and what exactly their role is. I know they've wanted to be able to do community impact statements, and I know they've wanted to be able to have additional time in front of city council and committees. But if you were to do that because of the informal nature of the alliances, then you open it up to any HOA chamber or anything like that. If you were to say the alliances could have those rights. So it's kind of in limbo right now. Okay. But I have heard more and more concerns about it. About particularly certain ones. And, you know, they all operate differently. Like the RAC has its own bylaws and they won't take action unless all the neighbor councils, including the community councils that aren't certified, participate. And then you have something like the LINC, which is just very informal. Yes, very informal. That they're not. It's basically whoever wants to show up will be a part of that. And they are the citywide, you know, neighbor council coalition. So I think it's going to, as you noted, it's going to probably come to head when some major issue comes up and an alliance takes a, you know, position and somehow controversy comes out of it.
That's already happened.
Yes.
And I've gotten some real blowback from some serious civic leaders about it.
Yeah, so I don't know if this is something that the commission wants to take up in terms of looking at alliances and where they fit in the plan. I mean, it is kind of a policy issue, and whether the plan needs to be altered to set guidelines together for alliances.
I guess that was going to be my next question is, do we have jurisdiction over something of this nature?
Well, as I mentioned, the only thing that's stated in the plan is just that neighbor councils can form alliances, and that's pretty much it. So unless there's an admin code change or something, but it doesn't mean that the commission couldn't take it upon themselves to look at this matter and say, we recommend to the city council that the admin code be changed and that certain, you know, alliances have to be recognized by the commission, or, you know, like maybe there's a certification process for alliances that the commission looks at.
Okay.
But it does require some type of admin code change.
Just for my edification, just to remind myself, an alliance can be made up of independent organizations and neighborhood councils together sometimes. Is sometimes an alliance made, their neighborhood councils involved within the alliance?
That is true. So if you look at like the Sustainability Alliance, that's a combination of some people who are on neighborhood councils and some people who are not. Then there's your State Emergency Preparedness Alliance that has neighbor council people for the most part, although there's some organizations that come who are, whether it's like ham radio or something, like they can be part of that. It's the membership is not so strict, unless it's like the RAC, which is the West Side Regional Alliance of Councils.
So, Commissioner Lippmann, so are you getting blowback from from alliances that are not neighborhood councils? They're an alliance of neighborhood groups or something? I mean,
no, I've specifically had meetings regarding the Sustainability Alliance and LANC.
And LANC?
The LA Neighborhood Council Alliance, as well as meetings on the West Side Regional Alliance and the Valley. So almost all the alliances, or not all, but two-thirds of them.
Yeah, well, the Valley Alliance is mostly neighborhood councils, though.
Well, it is, number one, the Valley, Leonard Schaefer, Commissioner Schaefer. Valley Alliance is neighborhood councils. There's generally no less than 25 of the 34 neighborhood councils in the Valley. The LANC used to be more formal. It is now less formal. It was more formal when yours truly helped form it back in 2005. It is now less formal. The RAC is their own because they're the only ones that have an outside organizations, a couple of neighborhood associations that aren't certified neighborhood councils. The HANC, which is in the harbor area, has a very loose organization in that they have rotating chairs. They don't have a permanent chair. The Alliance of River Neighborhood Councils up in the northeast area is a little more formal. If he doesn't mind, what Commissioner Lippman is talking about is that some neighborhood council people in the north part of the city came and asked that the Lank put something on the agenda with regards to road diets, because they felt that they were being endangered in fires and such, and their road to get out of their area was being set up so that
it's
and
not the issue.
Hang on a minute.
But it's not a specific issue. This is a recurring issue across alliances, and we as the commission and the department give them the imprimatur of legitimacy by listing them on our website.
Okay. That's a little. Wait a minute. But the thing that I think that you were referring to has to do with a fight between the bicycle people and people who wanted bike lanes and such removed so they could get out of their community. Just as a matter of history, for those who are here, the 912 commission, a particular current commissioner who was not a commissioner at the time, took the advice of the city attorney and introduced a motion that neighborhood councils had the right to join in regional and citywide alliances. And I won't go into the background as to why that was done. It had to do with some controversies. That was passed by the review commission and adopted by the city council. So that's where alliances were legitimated, but there was no formality done. It was only that they could join together and that the board members would still be protected, et cetera, when they were attending them. So there we are.
Commissioner Regalado.
Commissioner Regalado, I'm going to talk specifically with the Hank, but I believe this is something that I've heard kind of across the board, not from within the various alliances, but more from what I observe through city departments and others who find themselves utilizing the alliances to address the larger body of neighborhood councils in a region. I truly believe that there is a misunderstanding as to just what the role of the alliances are by some of these city departments that come out, make announcements, have expectations of what an alliance is capable of doing and not capable of doing, and the expectation sometimes that they walk in thinking that the people who are in an alliance actually speak for the neighborhood councils and can make decisions for those neighborhood councils at that particular moment. I think there is a clear misunderstanding as just what the power of what alliances hold, you know, or how much of a power that they hold, if any at all. The other thing too that I think is disturbing when I see a city department come in to give us information, and for the most part, very good information that we as neighborhood councils need, is their expectation is that now that we're advising you, we need your input, and we need it within 30 days. Or we need it within, we've had city departments come to us and say, we need it within the next 20 days. And that's just an impossibility to get any kind of feedback to any of initiatives that some of the departments are asking our input for to be able to do something like this, because they don't understand the process of what neighborhood councils go through to be able to get an opportunity to make a statement for the representing their neighborhood councils. We had someone from the planning department who came out and talked to us about a thing that they needed, and they wanted a comment by all the neighborhood councils within 30 days. And I said, that's an impossibility because of how we do our work. And I laid it out for him. You're lucky to be able to get information from neighborhood councils within 60 days sometimes, depending on when that alliance meets or when our alliance meets. And he just completely ignored the fact, and he says, okay, thanks for letting me know, but we still need it within 30 days. So I think perhaps the challenge with alliances is the fact that many people out there have no idea of just what power alliances have or don't have and what their role is. And maybe we could start by defining what an alliance is and what they can do and what they can't do. I guess what I'm maybe leading up to is that perhaps maybe we need to help define what an alliance is, especially to our other city departments, so that there is a clear expectation as to what they're coming to talk to us about and what they think that we can and can't do. And I think for the very minimum, that's something that we might be able to help, you know, our city partners in doing these things. I think the information, again, is very important that they share with us. It's good information. Their expectation is that we're going to be able to go back to our neighborhood councils and provide them with the same level of information that they gave us, and we're not going to be able to do that, not as effectively as they came to us. So I'd like to maybe put that in maybe perhaps some level of consideration, that we look at maybe just defining for our city partners what an alliance can and can't do, and what, you know, they can expect from us.
Do we have that policy somewhere? It would be a new policy. Do we have a policy somewhere on what alliances can do and not do? Yeah. So it would be something new to determine.
If I might, I don't know if I'm out of line, Commissioner Schaefer, but I'm wondering if there seems to be some reaction to neighborhood councils taking positions on important issues and perhaps writing letters and such to public officials in the city with regards to those issues. And I don't know if that's something that is raising the ire of some persons. It might be. But echoing the comments of Commissioner Regalado, I know that many city departments have actually come to me and asked where they can find the different alliances, because when they're going to make a presentation, they'd rather make it to a large number of neighborhood council representatives at one time rather than trying to hit 90-some neighborhood councils throughout the city. The last Valley Alliance meeting, we had the Dunn's election people there to make a presentation. We had Water and Power there to make a presentation. At the LANC meeting, we've had, again, DWP that comes out to make. The city clerk comes with regards to elections, and they appreciate the alliances because of the fact that there's a large number of representatives that they expect will take information back to their neighborhood councils, and that's what they were formed to do. So that's one of the big advantages.
Commissioner Atkinson. I've been, of course, to SLANC meetings, and those are only neighborhood councils. There's no extra any other neighborhood organizations that are in it. And lots of times, city agencies come and make presentations, and they do want a position. But every time, those neighborhood councils always say we have to go back to our boards, and they may do individual letters or they may do individual support. When they go back to their neighborhood council. I don't remember recently, but alliances, sometimes they would like to do a letter, a joint letter, but they can never usually do it because it's too much, permission that they have to get from their own board, so they just don't do that, but they do take their information back. And it's something that maybe we just have to... But that's an alliance that only is neighborhood councils. So, Commissioner Wiebe?
I have another question for Gracie that has nothing to do with alliances. Have we concluded the alliance discussion, or if not, I'll hold my question. But it has to do with elections.
I think we beat the alliance. I think we'll deal with it. Your next question.
They've been well covered. All right. Thank you. At this point, it's not clear to me whether or not I should have addressed this earlier when we had when Melvin was here, or if this really goes to the department. But you're well aware the central area is the first to have elections coming up, and so the questions that have come to me are from the people, you know, more in the central area, and there's concern about the stakeholder definition. I'm sure many were hoping that a new stakeholder definition would be in play. The question has to do with, or the concerns have been expressed to me have to do with stakeholder definition and what sort of identification is going to be accepted. It's my understanding that receipts are not going to be accepted for community interest stakeholders, but then that then spurred on other questions about would it just be letters. It's just too many questions out there and too much insecurity, in my opinion, about what is going to happen. I don't know if you can Deputy shed Secretary. Any light on how the elections are going to be handled.
Carmen.
Deputy City Attorney Carmen Hawkins, at this point, we're going much further than what has been agendized today for discussion substantively. So if you would like, I mean, the department can give a general kind of overview response otherwise, what you can do is request a report back on these specific issues from the general counsel to be heard at the next meeting.
Gracie Liu, General Manager of the Department of Empowerment. I will pass that on to the Office of the City Clerk. They run the elections, and they'll be clarifying any of these changes that they will be doing in terms of the stakeholder definition and what documents will be required. So I will make sure that they know your question and that clarification needs to be had. We are meeting with them next week, and that's actually on our agenda to discuss as well.
Okay. And at this point, I think I'm asking more of a general question to each of you. It's best that I would filter any feedback that I get through Gracie and perhaps through the city clerk's office. Is that the best route for me?
You can communicate directly with either department. The city clerk's office is the department that's in charge of the elections, and they would be determining how those elections are going to be run and what type of documentation or proof of established stakeholder status under the current admin code. The council's request to amend the stakeholder status will not come into play until the next election.
Thank you. I always appreciate the guidance and the clarification. Beautiful.
Anything else? All right. Next item is the presentation, discussion, and possible action for the mayor's Mayor Eric Garcetti's 2019 Great Streets Challenge outreach. Come on up. Thank you for waiting so long.
I think that I'll just speak on here, and I don't need to do the presentation. I'll just speak to the group.
Cool.
It's facing that way.
We can move it.
Can't see
the
screen anyway.
It swivels. Oh, okay. I was like, it doesn't make any sense. So, okay.
Oh, there we go.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Thank you.
Nope. Cannot see.
My name is Anissa. I'm Robbie. I'm from the Mayor's Office of City Services, and I'm on the Great Streets Initiatives team. And so, could you go to the next slide? Thank you. I'm here to talk about the third round of the Challenge Grant, which is coming up, and to give you some history. You probably know about the Great Streets Initiative. It was launched by the mayor as his first executive directive in 2013. Goal is to reimagine neighborhood centers and rethink what public space can look like. Can you speak into the mic?
It's recording.
Oh, okay.
We can pull it out. If it,
yeah. I can pull it out. Okay. It's okay. I'll just sit. All right. Can you go to the next slide? So to look back into the past a little bit, we now have 18 total Great Streets. So when the program was created, each council district got a Great Street. So at that time, there was 15. And since then, we've had a challenge grant round process and added an additional 3 Great Streets. So we've created some diverse projects, bike lanes and curb extensions and murals, business signage. We've established some pretty strong community partnerships on those Great Streets with organizations and as well as collaboratives between neighborhood councils and organizations. And we've engaged with over 50,000 community residents since the start of the program. Looking back at the program and how we've developed it and how it's gone, our goal is to develop more community support for built projects and make sure that there is community buy-in for each project that eventually gets built. And then looking more internally, we want to build stronger interagency coordination here in City Hall, as well as streamline permitting processes for some of the demonstration and pop-up events that we do. So some of our overarching goals. First one is economic activity. We have also a Great Streets, Great Businesses program that we haven't started up yet, but the idea of implementing and coordinating these investment projects on specific streets is to spur economic activity, as well as enhance and reflect neighborhood character. I think one of the central aspects of this program is to create improvements that reflect what the neighborhood want and kind of amplify what the neighborhood wants, as well as promoting environmental resilience. And the whole process is rooted in community engagement and also to promote access and mobility in our neighborhoods. And so in terms of the purpose, the goal has been to empower communities to build stronger relationships with the city and to understand how the city works in terms of changing streets, whether it's temporary or for permanent improvements. And it's really to help communities envision and build street projects. Some of them are temporary, some of them are permanent, but to help them build their vision and create projects that are locally supported, data-driven, resource efficient, and aligned with overarching city priorities. So who is eligible? This has stayed the same, although our program is changing a little bit, and I'll go into that. This is staying the same, so nonprofits with 501c3 status can apply, and the 501c3 status is very important. Schools and universities, faith centers and institutions also with 501c3 status, BIDs and chambers of commerce. So in terms of neighborhood councils, in the past, we've had neighborhood councils apply with other organizations. So the most important part is to have a fiscal sponsor. So going forward, we have changed the structure of the project a little bit. Once applications come through, we have a technical advisory committee in the city, which is composed and made up of one representative from each important department that plays a role in these projects. So from Department of Transportation, Department of City Planning, Cultural Affairs, the Mayor's Office, and we also have street services, street lighting, and we also have some community evaluators. So we will pick 10 challenge grant winners, and these winners will receive 6 months of technical assistance from a consultant, as well as resources to build capacity and figure out what their vision is for their street. Following that, they come back to the city, and we select 4 build projects, which will receive technical feasibility testing, again, from the consultant, and finalized design from BOE, and then construction. So, yeah, kind of what I just said in the round 3 structure is the round 3 is going to open up soon, and the application period will be 2 months long. And in that time period, we are hoping to have community workshops to work with the community organizations and partners to help them build the best possible application, and doing things like this to do as much outreach as possible to people who are closer to communities and know the organizations that would be interested in applying for this grant opportunity. And like I said, 10 challenge grants are then awarded. They go through the 6-month period of community outreach and finalizing their
concept design, and then four build projects will be chosen, and then we'll go into the finalized design and feasibility, and then construction begins. So the current status right now is we're hoping to open the application before the end of January, which is soon, and then hold community workshops and webinars in February to really help organizations build their application, and then the deadline will be in March, and we're hoping to select the 10 challenge grant winners by April. And in terms of what they will receive, so the first 10 challenge grant winners receive $15,000 to work with a consultant in the city to kind of finalize their concept design and do demonstration events and pop-ups, and then the four build projects receive $500,000 each to implement the permanent street improvements that they've kind of envisioned. I'm happy to answer any questions. I have my business card here, and I have these little postcards. If you want to distribute them to people or organizations that you know of that would be interested in applying, that was kind of my goal of coming here, was to make sure that as many people as possible know how the structure of the program is different this year, and that the third round is coming up. So yeah, I don't know if there are any questions. Yeah.
Commissioner Lippman.
Who makes the decision on who gets funding?
On who's selected? Yeah, so like I said, there's a technical advisory committee, so it's our team from the mayor's office, and then in addition to that, one representative from each of the important departments that are involved. So that's Department of Transportation, the Great Streets main player there will be involved, and then Department of Planning, Cultural Affairs, Street Services, Street Lighting, and I think that's it. And we also want to select a community evaluator, so we're guessing that will be somebody who's successfully gone through the Great Streets project and implemented their project, and have them, someone who's from the community, be on the team of evaluators. And the mayor's team has kind of reevaluated our scoring criteria, and that's going to be in the application guide. So it's very transparent as to how our to the community partners and the people receiving the application, how will you be scored and how will you be selected. I should have added, there was a slide in a different presentation on the selection criteria, but it's basically on their challenge statement, which is like just kind of just discussing their opportunities and challenges and what their vision is. The location of their project and whether that's in city priority area. So we have a map that will be externally facing towards the community partners that will show them, like, are they in a transit priority area? Are they in an area that is not close to any parks or schools? Or are they in a very job-rich area? Things like that that we want to take into consideration when we're selecting them. Some of the aspects of the selection criteria are much more, I think, numerical, and then some of them are more subjective. So that's kind of what I can say, but I can send more information on the selection criteria too.
Any other questions?
Is it is it by council district again?
No. So anybody can apply. Multiple or organizations/community partners can apply from council districts, and like we could select two from a council district, or we could select none.
Okay.
One of the elements is a council letter that's mandatory, is a letter of support from the council member from their council district when they're submitting their application. So they cannot apply or be selected if they don't have a letter of support from their council district.
And if you've applied in the past, is that a negative or a positive?
No, definitely a positive. I haven't been here for that long, but I'm trying to reach out to organizations that have applied in the past and haven't gotten it.
Because my community applied in the past, and we lost simply because we were placed second behind another project in the same council district.
Oh, okay.
That was given priority by the council office.
Yeah, so we're trying to – where the goal is not to select by council district, and if there's two great projects in one council district, then that's great, and we would like to give them to both. It's just about the quality of the application.
Great.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Nope.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I'm going to leave my cards and these little postcards here. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, we're almost done. Number 13 on the agenda is community business. Does Do any of the commissioners have any comments on activities, announcements, anything like that? Commissioner
Schaefer? Yes, very briefly. I'd like to let all the commissioners know that March 14th is the Valley Alliance Mixer, their yearly mixer, at CBS Studios. All of the commissioners are invited. If you wish to come, please let me know. I can get you an invite that you return, because if you're not on the list, they don't let you into the studios. Next, I'm happy to say that my Neighborhood Council Emergency Preparedness Alliance, and thank you to Dunn for the support, last month had South Bureau CERT come and talk about a communications plan for neighborhood councils during emergencies. And this month, so far, I've had a positive response for having representatives from the city of Malibu and where else? Oh, my goodness, the canyon that had to evacuate next to West Hills. I'll think of the name of it in a moment. And perhaps Camarillo, and they're going to be coming to talk to us about what went right, what went wrong, about their notifications and evacuation plans and what they might do in the future, with the idea that some neighborhood councils have been asking about plans for evacuation because of dangers to their areas, and we hope to be able to help them with their emergency preparedness and community and resilience plans with regards to evacuations and such. Last but not least, for the commissioners, there is a Resilience Civic U meeting on the 28th at Deaton, 6:30 p.m. If you want to come, they'll be talking about the community plans. That's it.
Ms. Lippman?
I'd just like to publicly say that I'd like to add to the agenda for next meeting discussion and possible action to form an ad hoc committee to discuss policy recommendations on neighborhood council alliances to amend the administrative code. Yes. So we'll discuss it at our agenda setting meeting.
Okay. Anything else? I also wanted to mention I had emailed Lynn and said it would take a few more meetings to talk about amending or updating our rules of procedure and our policy and guidelines. We had said it at one of our previous board meetings that we wanted to kind of update and be sure, and Lynn had already started working on it and has been talking to the city attorney, I believe, but it's going to take a few meetings, but I wanted to mention it today that we're working on it, and I put you on the committee, Commissioner Wiebe, but don't worry, Lynn is doing a lot of work.
Got to find my old notes.
But he's going to need your input. We wanted to have a newer commissioner on to go over the rules and guidelines, and so experience and new. So, but that's going to take a couple more months, I would assume. A little bit of work. But, thought maybe I better tell you you're on the committee. But I did email you and tell you. Right. So that's any other commission business? No? I will accept a motion for adjournment. Please look at the schedule for the next meetings. Anyway, so I will accept a motion for adjournment.
I moved in.
And Regalado seconded?
Second.
Okay, been moved and seconded to adjourn the meeting. All in favor?
All right.
Thank you, everybody.
I see we're going to have to cancel the airplanes. We're going to have to make
another meeting. Everybody, hold on. What was that, President's Day?
You know,
that's President's Day.
I'm going to talk to my alliance group.
Is that what that is?
See what they
is February 18th President's Day? Is that why we're canceling? Is that the holiday?
Over the years with Jill.
Hey, Lillian.
You may not.
February 18th, what's that, President's Day? Is that what we're canceling? Okay.
You may say that the Valley Alliance and those present, but you cannot say it was the neighboring council.
Turn it off.
Because at the length we said it was the...